You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon.
It never isn't.
Today we're going to be talking about the second serial of the 23rd season of Doctor Who, also kind of the first serial, it's all just one big thing. Trial of a Time Lord, parts 5 through 8, part 2, it's Mind Warp, which consists of 4 episodes that aired from October 4th, 1986 to October 25th, 1986. And I want to give a special shout out to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden!
You can check him out at matthewgolden.net. And today we have a returning guest. It's Felicity Cousinets. Welcome back.
Hello. It's good to be here.
How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. I've got a new job, but at the same company. But it's going to be a good change, I think, and kind of a fresh start, which is good timing for going back into the office full time. Looking forward to doing something new, meeting new people, trying not to let them know how weird I am right away.
I like to just be really upfront about it because I find it weeds out the people who are too weak.
What's really funny is that I've had a lot of sinus issues this year. I won't go into it, but when I interviewed, I actually had laryngitis, so I was whispering. So they basically think they hired someone who doesn't talk very much, and they're going to get a big surprise.
Does that count as lying in your interview?
Yeah, oops.
I think assumptions are on the people who make them.
Right. No, yeah, if I can't talk very well, I'm going to talk at a minimum. When I can talk again, watch out.
That's generally people's reaction, but like after they've known me for like half a year. It's like, oh, you're loud and obnoxious. Have you been loud and obnoxious the whole time? Because I am selectively loud and obnoxious.
Yeah, I feel like I'm that way too.
I'm very quiet around people I don't know. And then, if you get me talking, I'm a huge idiot.
We can all relate to that.
Should we try and get you talking?
Yes.
Sure.
Let's get talking about Doctor Who.
Yeah, I was looking up to see what your last episode was because I couldn't remember. You were in The Five Doctors, but also you were kind of in our hiatus special. And I just want to say, hey, thanks for being a part of that ridiculous song.
Yeah. You can't say, hey, thanks. I have that copywritten.
Oh. Hello, thanks.
Yeah, something Christine put together. And it was funny because I actually recorded my bit a couple days after having sinus surgery. So,
oh no.
Yeah, I was not at my best, but I really wanted to take part.
It made me very happy. I enjoyed that song. It's been stuck in my head ever since I heard it.
Yeah, just on a continual loop. Same.
And actually, I was catching up on your podcast because I'd gotten behind because I wanted to, get your impressions of the whole first Sixth Doctor season. And so I just listened to Revelation of the Daleks where you were talking about the original Doctor in Distress because that was that came out during the hiatus.
That's what I mentioned to Christine, like, if you write lyrics to it, I'll sing it. Like, if you do a parody song, I'll sing it on the podcast. And she was like, actually, I'm just going to make the song.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay.
Yeah,
that works for me.
It
turned out pretty good. So, should we talk about the second season of The Sixth Doctor? Well, technically the third, because he had that one episode.
The Twin Dilemma was from the previous season, so technically The Sixth Doctor spans 3 seasons, but
his second full season.
Yes, that's correct. Let's do it.
All right, let's talk about Mind Warp. Now we're going to talk about Trial of a Time Lord, Part 2, Part 5 to 8, Mind Warp, Part 1, Episode 1, which I have titled Tidings of Pink.
Yep, that's good.
We sort of recap that we're at the in the trial. The Valyard's going to present his second piece of evidence. The Inquisitor says to the Doctor to please stop making yard names.
They're not that funny.
That's what she says.
Yeah.
Don't quit your date job.
I don't know if they, I don't know how much of a, how clear they made this ultimately, but I know that the plan, you know, the concept was, you know, there will be evidence from the Doctor's past, present, and future. So the first four episodes were a story from the Doctor's past, although recent past, and then present, this is what the Doctor was doing most recently, and then the next story will be from the Doctor's future somehow.
That's interesting. This one is still technically the past, but just like...
Correct, yeah.
Just the more recent past.
It's the more recent past.
Yeah, the, yeah, present, like the trial is what's going on right now, technically.
Like turning a camera on a monitor, yeah.
Just show earlier bits of the trial. Look how he was acting in the last serial.
Oh, no.
He's kind of an ass, right?
Yep.
No, I don't think you can kill people for being an ass.
Oh, if only.
Right?
I have a question. Since all of these are titled Trial of a Time Lord, part 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, whatever. But they are known by, like, the Mysterious Planet and Mind Warp and Terror of the Vovoids and so on. Where did those titles come from? Were they... Is that what the scripts were called? Or?
I think that's... I mean, that's either what the scripts were called or that's what the authors of those particular stories came up with. And when they novelized them, those are the names that they used as well.
I wasn't sure if it was, like, back in the, like, first Doctor era, some of the serial names are just, like, made up.
Right. It kind of, retconned by fans. You know, I think that, you know, these were titles that were associated with them at the time, because this was the classic season that I watched most closely to when it actually aired. You know, by the time of the hiatus, I'd caught up to, you know, my PBS station had caught up to the first full Colin Baker season. And so they were able to get this relatively soon after it had aired in the UK. So I was coming to this blind, actually, for the first time. This, you know, I didn't have the program guide or anything else to refer to in terms of, you know, the story content.
Alan, R. Alan Seiler, he was on our last episode. He said the same thing. It was like the first time they caught up to like what was current on his PBS. He said he kept getting annoyed because they would like do it and then they just loop right back to the Fourth Doctor and he kept seeing the same stuff.
That was exactly my experience as well, because they something about the way that the purchasing worked. They always like made them buy the Fourth Doctor again because they had a lot of it.
You could at least go back to the Third Doctor.
Yeah, for me it was kind of iterative. Like I actually saw the Five Doctors first, but then it went back to Robot, and then I got through the Fourth Doctor and the rest of the Fifth Doctor, and then it went back to Third Doctor, and then eventually, I think we had two different PBS stations, so one of them eventually got the First and Second Doctor, while the main channel was getting further along with the Sixth and ultimately the Seventh Doctor.
I remember that was like a big thing that we were proud of at Retro, because when we like negotiated the contract, it was like, we want the most complete thing as possible. And they were like, really? Why?
I think the BBC thinks people will be confused. Like, oh, it's black and white. Now it's color. Or it's like, now it's animated. Now it's not. Like,
well, yeah, they actually have like strict rules about, like, they don't want any incomplete or any reconstructions airing, you know, out of context.
Yeah. I mean, they never intended to air it again at all. That's why a lot of it got destroyed. Yeah. And they didn't really anticipate American fandom. I mean, American fans approach things a lot of us in a completist sort of way. We want to see everything.
That's me in a nutshell. Like,
I gathered.
Hence because why of this we're podcast. Here.
That's literally everything I do.
Yeah.
But back to the story and my title, Tidings of Pink. We start the second episode that the trial is watching, and the TARDIS lands on Thoros Beta in some pink water.
Basically a vaporwave screensaver.
Yes. It looks amazing.
It does look great. I love it.
Yeah, it was definitely something different, and I liked it too.
It looks so 80s, and I love it. It's currently my background on my computer. So
neat.
I mean, the only thing that like really dates it is the fact that like the filter goes over them as well.
Yeah. I think Nicola Bryant did not like filming these scenes. She didn't like being in the ocean. Like, then they were like,
oh yeah, they had waded through it. Yeah.
And apparently they had mics on them as well, so they were like worried about getting those wet.
That sounds stressful.
And she was, her first story, Planet of Fire, was on a beach.
That's true. She went swimming in that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, yeah, she had to wear
she
a bikini.
She probably wasn't wearing a mic.
Yeah.
She's like, no bikini this time, okay?
Yeah, they've been slightly better with Perry this season. And then, well, we'll get there.
I don't know how to explain the difference other than, because it's not like the amount of skin that's showing. It's like, that looks more comfortable. Like, yeah. She picked it out as opposed to some dude.
Yeah, she's wearing long pants. I think, I remember in the first four episodes, she's wearing like an overshirt, not just a boob tube or tank top.
She is wearing a pink shirt, right? And I think that was solely because, like, oh, we're going to be putting a big pink filter over you. So this will, like, help it not look too distracting. But the doctor has got a device from a dying warlord and has come to this planet to figure out what's up with it. And it also has, this device has the ability to deflate a rock. He presses a button and then just this rock goes shh. It looks like it's clearly just an inflatable rock that they let air out of.
No.
They go into a cave that has a big device that extracts energy from the sea. And then they are soon attacked by a monster, which we'll later learn is called The Rock. Not to be confused with Dwayne Johnson, but...
I would like to see an edit of this where the monster is just replaced with Dwayne Johnson.
I feel like that would be, like, he'd be competing for attention with Brian Blessed.
Oh, absolutely.
He's like,
yeah.
Yeah, he's a larger than life persona.
Dwayne Johnson and Brian Blessed in the same thing would be amazing.
It would. It really would.
Oh, I'd watch that.
Are they partners or are they enemies?
I think Yes. They're initially enemies and they become, like, they team up.
Enemies to lovers.
Most definitely. They get into a little wrestling match with The Rock. I didn't even mean to say, like, the wrestling match.
It's going to be impossible not to do that, so.
But they do sort of struggle with him, and the doctor accidentally, well, he claims he accidentally shoots him with the device, and he dies. They are soon confronted by a guard. His name is Frax. He comes up and says, hey, you killed the guy who operates this machine. That's not cool. And they're like, he attacked us. That's not cool. And they're like, well, we're going to take you and question you and stuff and see if what you're saying is true. And then we cut to a scene where we see a scientist named Crozier operating on Yerkanos, a king. But yeah, it's Brian Blessed. I screamed that out when he showed up. I was like, yay, I know this guy.
And what did you primarily know him from? Previous to this.
I think just pop culture, mostly. Is he in the Pirates Brand of Misfits?
Probably.
Brand of Misfits?
Band of Misfits. He's the
Pirate King. We discussed the Flash Gordon connection, which I had not seen at the time, and you have not seen at all. I think he was known for I, Claudius on British TV.
Oh,
and
man,
like a lot of other stuff.
So many chunks of I, Claudius. I made a promo for it, and I had never seen it before, and so I just watched, like, short chunks of it trying to be like, what needs to be pulled from this show here. I just got shot right back there, basically.
But yeah, I mean, a lot of Doctor Who connections there because Derek Jacobi and John Hurt were both in.
Oh, he's
well.
Also Boss Nass, so that's something I know him from Star Wars, and Clayton in Tarzan.
Oh, okay.
Those are all voice. I mostly know him from voice acting, I guess, but those are all larger than life characters.
Yeah,
so.
I think it would be hard to squeeze him into a regular sized character.
I'd love to see an understated performance from this man.
So the closest I can think of is that in the Kenneth Branagh Hamlet, which is like the full length.
It's like 4 hours.
Hamlet, yeah. He plays the ghost of his father. And he's just kind of, he's very scary, actually. You know, he appears to Hamlet and he's just kind of like, swear that you will avenge me. Anyway, that's a very bad impression, but I mean, he's subdued in that he's just kind of, you know, scary and ghost-like.
I mean, like, Clayton and Tarzan's not, like, super over the top, but he still has that just amazing voice, so all rounded and deep and as good. But even in this scene, he's just laying on a table, not really doing much because he's being operated on, but he still just randomly yells out words. Scum!
Yes.
Kill! And stuff like that. The doctor and Perry are still around the dead rock, and he's like, actually, I think that the rock might still be alive. It winked at Perry, and then there's some joke made about that, and the doctor says there's no accounting for taste, which is rude. But he's like, I need to, let me check it. I'm a doctor. Perry's my nurse. I need to do a skedaddle test on it.
Clever.
And then they flip the gurney that the rock is on, and then they just run away. They skedaddle. And then they come across a wolf boy.
He looks so uncomfortable.
This character's name is Dorf. He's been sort of experimented on and mutated, which this is from the same writer who did...
Vengeance on Varos.
Thank you. Vengeance on Varos, which also has a sort of theme of experimenting on people and turning them into animals. I guess that's just something this guy likes.
I was also thinking of, just because I just listened to it, the beginning of Revelation of the Daleks when they encounter the like mutated guy in the lake.
It's a Sixth Doctor theme. But this guy, his name is Dorf, and he's a wolf guy. He has these big, gigantic, like, canine teeth in his mouth that he can't close his mouth.
No, he has to be drooling all over himself.
Yeah, that's what stuck with me. Like, his mouth is just always open.
All of his dialogue is like, "Hello, I'm Dorf."
He's trying his best.
Most of his dialogue is, "Please kill me." On the documentary that is on the DVD, Brian Blessed was like saying, filming scenes with him was the hardest because he just kept laughing at how he's just like drooling all over the place and everything. He's like, it was very hard to take him seriously.
I would think that, yeah, Brian Blessed would have a hard time taking all of this seriously. Just Doctor Who in general.
On the documentary, he seemed like he took it very seriously, for as silly as his performance is and everything. But he, like, seemed to, like, he really enjoyed it. And he was like, it was a fun character to play. And he's, like, going into the themes of his character and everything.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
I was like, that's cool. Yeah. He seemed to enjoy it. He seemed to enjoy it more than Nicola Bryant did. Or Colin Baker, for that matter, because he had some complaints, which we'll get to. Well, I'll bring them up when they become relevant. But the Doctor and Perry are sneaking around, and then they see a trio of slug guys, one of whom is the guy from Vengeance on Varos. It's Syl, the la-la-la-la-la-la-la guy.
Yep.
I love him.
Do you know what's great about this? I'm going to reference Supernatural, but it'll be okay. Castiel, the guy who plays him, Misha Collins, talked about, like, I was the first person to play an angel. I was establishing how they are. They're awkward and, like, don't understand humans. And then all other angels that came on afterwards didn't do that. So now Cass is just weird. Syl is like that.
The other members of his species do not gargle all the time.
No, that is a Syl-specific activity. He is just like that.
What is his race called? Are they called mentors, or is that just a certain subsection of them?
I think they're generally thought of as the mentors, or called the mentors, but which is dumb because it's a word that in English that we use.
But yeah, he's the only one who goes la 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 la, and everyone else is just, actually most of the rest of them are just kind of grumpy.
Yeah.
Also, none of them are, like, as gross, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, he's just a perv, and everyone just kind of ignores him if they can.
He's the only one who's just, like, eating disgusting food. And
eating slime with his fingers.
That's kind of neat, though. Like, just like, oh, it's just that guy.
This isn't an alien thing. He's just like that.
We get a little bit of a court scene where the Valyr points out that the Doctor keeps putting his companions in danger, despite Perry obviously not wanting to be there. And I think that's a fair point.
It sure is.
I think that the courtroom scenes in this serial are tied in with the plot a lot better than they were in The Mysterious Planet. The Mysterious Planet felt like it was a serial that they slapped these bookends on.
Yeah.
Right.
And this one actually feels like it is 100% part of the thing.
Well, they were planning, you know, a season before the hiatus came. So they had some, I know that they had some scripts from that. I don't know if they tried to rework any of those first, and then, I mean, I know that this script came in later, and so they were able to really integrate the trial into it, as opposed to, yeah, scripts that came to them through different means and weren't originally intended to be part of the trial.
Yeah, like, this one feels like it's feels intentionally
integrated.
Yeah, like,
from the previous season, like, the one I was most impressed by, and the one that I would have said, oh yeah, well, I want to see that writer come back, would have been Vengeance on Varos.
Yeah, I think that was my favorite of last season, so. Because it's just so meta and good.
Yeah, it's really cleverly done. And, you know, Syl, I don't know if I would have wanted to see Syl again, but, you know, you take the good with the bad. And he's unique,
I love
at least.
Syl.
He's, he's a different character than we've seen before.
There's two sort of main mentors that we focus on in this serial, and one of them is Syl, and the other one is Kiv, who is sort of, I guess, the leader mentor. He's played by somebody I know, too. He's from The Young Ones, much like...
Oh, yeah, Alexei Sayle, who was the DJ, was from Young Ones. I'd never seen The Young Ones, but I remember being aware of it, or, like, finding out about it when I saw Revelation of the Daleks, and, like, what's the deal with this guy?
What's interesting, the guy who plays Kiv, because Alexei Sayle was kind of like just a secondary character on The Young Ones, but this guy was one of the main characters. There was like four guys who live together, and he was my least favorite out of the four, because he was sort of the most normal of the bunch, but kind of a parody of the normal cool guy at the same time. His name was Mike. The other ones had like very distinctive, like there was like the sort of punk rocker guy, there was the sort of preppy snot guy, and then there was like the hippie guy, and then there's just this guy's just a normal cool dude. But that's the guy who plays Kiv. I don't remember his name, but I know he was Mike on The Young Ones, and he does a decent job here. He has headaches because his brain too big for his head. Because Crozier has been experimenting on him and, I don't know, making him smarter, I guess. This is also the second serial, like in the two doctors, where they're sort of making a species better, I guess.
Yeah, trying to enhance the intelligence, but yeah, there are side effects to that. They haven't quite gotten it down yet.
There's also somewhere around this point, there was a deleted scene where the doctor tries to be like, let's stop talking about this serial. Why was the Earth moved, and what was Glitz after? And I'm like, that would have been interesting to bring back up, because I'm still curious about those things.
I would also like answers to those questions.
Well, I generally like this serial a lot. There are definitely things that are missing, and I think that, I'm not positive, but I think they ran over time and had to cut a lot that would have made the story more comprehensible as a whole. There's definitely big holes in it.
Yeah, I, again, the thing Colin Baker had an issue with is part of that too, and I think that happens in episode 2 or 3. But I was talking about Kiv having the headaches, and basically he's going to be transferring his brain into a different body, but that's going to have to be postponed because Crozier has gotten the Rock's body, and he was like, it's possible that the Rock sort of reverted to his more primal state.
That's why he attacked the doctor.
And that's why he attacked the doctor. So I need to find out if that's true or not. And if it is true, I'm going to have to figure something else out, because transferring your brain is not going to work. But if it isn't true, hey, we're going to put your brain in a whole new body. And so, but he's like, I need to question the doctor. And then Kiv tells Syl to find the intruders, or he could wind up dead. Or worse, poor.
Yeah, we know what Syl's motivations are from his previous appearance.
He want that money. The doctor and Perry find Yurkanos strapped to a table. And then the doctor starts fussing with the machinery that he's connected to. They're basically trying to, like, make Yurkanos less Brian Blessed.
Good luck.
Just calm him down. And it's not working. He just keeps yelling at words.
Obviously, that doesn't work.
But they are caught sort of fiddling around with it by Syl and Crozier. And they come in and put the doctor on the machine to torture him for info. That is the end of episode 1. What do you guys think about Crozier? I've mentioned him a few times. He has an interesting energy.
Yeah, his delivery is very odd. And I think that, I mean, I like it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, no one else is doing it. So
he's very, like, low key, which I think kind of works when you've got Brian Blessed.
But I can't decide. I mean, he's almost doing a weird accent, or just he has very weird elocution. Yeah, I don't know if he's, like, doing something science fiction-y, deliberately, or... I don't know what's going on with him. I do think he stands out as a character.
To me, he feels like he's, I don't know, just playing, like, this super cool badass, but he's not really doing anything.
Right, oh yeah. Someone with an elevated sense of himself, which makes sense for the context of the story, I think. Because he's playing God, basically.
And he's doing it in, like, this cool, suave way. But he's just your typical scientist at the same time. Mad scientist, I should say.
I can't really think... Like, I'm trying to think about, like, a moment or something about him that stands out. And I'm blanking.
I'll tell you the moment that really stood out to me is when, like, there's a point, I think, where Kiv is dying. And he's like, oh, no, we got to take care of this. And he takes a sip of his drink. And then he starts doing, like, CPR on him.
Oh, yeah.
He's just very, like, casual. But that's the end of episode one. We are now into episode two, which I have called A Blessed Performance. Because Urkanos wakes up and immediately just starts throwing shit. He just tears some stuff down. He says some nonsense words in some language I'm sure he made up. He does this, like, cross arms hissing thing.
Oh, yeah.
He is having fun.
Absolutely.
He leaves with the doctor and Perry. And the doctor is not doing great because they were torturing him. Urkanos is just pacing and shouting about vengeance and whatnot, while the doctor is just slowly sliding down the wall in the background. It's absolutely beautiful. I love the just chaotic comedy going on here. He even picks Perry up at one point to, I don't know, yell at her. They were talking about most people can only do that for like lift someone up like that for just like a short period of time. And he had like a 2-minute monologue and he's just held her up the whole time.
He's got a weird source of energy that no one else has access to.
That's the blessed performance. And he's talking about, like, you know, violence and killing everybody. And the doctor seems super down for that. Thinks that sounds fun. He is so loopy right now.
Yeah, he's loopy. He seems loopy or high or obviously not his normal self.
It's like his mind has been warped or something.
Oh!
There's also a brief bit where Perry does her tight five on politics.
Yeah!
She's like, oh, those nuts up in Washington. I don't know.
Yeah, that was bizarrely out of place.
I like that your note just says, the doctor remembers none of this.
He does. He cuts back to the trial and he's like, I don't know about any of this.
Okay, so this is the thing. I think now is a good time to talk about it.
Yeah.
I like this serial, but like the whole tension of it is like, what is happening? There are about three options. One, whatever they did to the doctor and that machine messed him up and made him all, like, weird and violent. Two, the Matrix is lying. The Valyard is lying. And three, there's, like...
He's doing it on purpose, but as, like, a ploy.
Yes. And I would like to know which of those three it is, and it turns out, so would Colin Baker.
Yes.
I want to say it becomes, like, there's more evidence for one of these situations than the other, and as you progress in this season... But it's never, I don't think it ever comes to a really satisfactory explanation.
Which is wild to me. Because, okay, the question is a good question. It's what makes the episode good? Because you're watching it and you're like, what is happening?
Yeah.
What's the truth?
Someone tell me what's happening. And going through it with the assumption that in the next episode, or at the end of the season, at some point, you will get an answer to that question and be like, oh, okay, now we know. It's a really good serial. Knowing that you don't get a clear, like, satisfactory answer to that question makes it intensely frustrating.
And there's reasons, I mean, there's real-world related reasons for it, because Robert Holmes was supposed to write the conclusion and then he died. Basically, the two-part conclusion was a rush job, and I think they were juggling too many balls, and Eric Sayward didn't agree with the way that Pip and Jane Baker ultimately ended it, and it was just a whole mess. So I think, you know, this is one of the things that got lost in the shuffle.
Yeah. But the fact to me that, like, an actor goes and it says, which of the three is it so I know how to act?
Yeah.
And they say, however you feel. And it's like, what?
Yeah.
Because Colin Baker went to the director and was like, how do I play this scene? Because there's three options. And he's like, you need to ask Eric Sayward. So he went to Eric Sayward and he was like, I don't know, you need to ask the guy who wrote this episode. I don't know. So he goes to him and he's like, I don't know, Eric Sayward added all that stuff about the trial. So he's like, I don't know. And then Colin Baker's like, went to J&T, and then he was like, just do whatever, it doesn't matter. And he's like, and that's like, that tells you what it was like at that point of time.
Exactly, that's really it, and that's in a nutshell what the issue was. That, I mean, that's the issue that they went on hiatus because of, and it doesn't seem like it's being fixed.
That's what's wild to me, though, is like, to me, that is that tension between which of these three options is it, is like the central thing of this serial. Mm-hmm. It's what drives it. It's what makes it exciting. It's, you said, you were like, I've never wanted to watch like the next episode.
So badly, yeah.
Like we, and sometimes we watch serials all at once. That's not the way they were designed to be watched. It's not a good way to watch them. Sometimes we get, you know, halfway through, we get on episode three and I'm like, God, I don't want to watch the fourth one. I want to go take a nap. We tore through it, you know?
And we're like, what happens next? And from what I've heard, it just, it's less than satisfying.
Yeah, because you don't get it right away because we go on to the, you know, the third story.
Which is a terrible story, cliffhanger.
And then things sort of get wrapped up in the last two episodes, but
Considering where they leave Perry.
But yeah, you definitely don't hear about what happens to Perry for, you know, the next four episodes, forget about it, but it's either the 13th or the 14th episode. And I'm thinking it's the 14th before you hear what happens to Perry.
That's bonkers. It seems like the Doctor would be very concerned about that, but when it happens, he seems more concerned about, like, why am I here at this trial and what's going on, what's real, and more so than, like, what happened to my friend? Which is a little awkward and weird.
I mean, he definitely has an emotional reaction to that.
Yeah, when we get to what appears to happen to Perry, he definitely reacts to it.
It isn't a serial that, like, made me go, oh, wait, what's happening? So, like, on the one hand, I think this is a very good serial, but also very frustrating.
Sometimes the best things are both exciting and frustrating.
Tony, you were comparing this to New Who with the trilogy.
Is it Extremis? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
I absolutely adore the first episode of that. I think it's one of my favorite episodes of Doctor Who. And then the two parters that come after that, I do not care about.
I feel roughly the same way about that. The first one is unique, and it's very, the way it unfolds is really interesting.
And it sets up a lot of interesting questions and stuff, and then the next two episodes feel like completely disconnected from it in a way, and it's just like, oh, you can tell they're like, oh, we have three similar ideas here, let's just try to tie them together.
Squish them all together.
It didn't fully work.
You know, up until that season, I was really a Moffat apologist, and I would defend his storytelling, you know, in most cases, but I can't defend that season.
Well, the episode he wrote was really good.
Right. I had the opposite, where for a lot of it, I did not like Moffat, like, at all. And then later, I was like, I just needed to chill out, to be honest. I think Moffat had a lot of problems, but I think he's somebody who, I mean, one, he can write, as opposed to maybe people who are running the show now.
Yeah.
But I think he legitimately took
criticism.
Yeah. Maybe sometimes to a fault.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that says a lot, I think.
So, yeah, the next scene is sort of Yorkanos is going to go attack everybody. The Doctor sort of just warns everybody as they're coming in. He's like, look out behind you. And just completely betrays Perry and Yorkanos. And then just teams up with Syl. He's like, yeah, I'm on your team now.
Which is wild.
Absolutely crazy. And then that's when the Doctor's like, oh, yeah, I remember this. It's a clever ploy.
This definitely is a ploy, right.
But even he seems uncertain. And that's good. I like that. I like that he's like, because that's what I was saying in the last serial. I was like, it'd be interesting if, like, there was stuff and he's like, oh, wait, I don't remember this at all. Because it was from his future. I was like saying it'd be interesting if it showed him dying and then him freaking out. But
yeah, if there's one thing that defines the Sixth Doctor, it's like he's, you know, brash and confident. And so seeing him kind of admitting that he doesn't really know what's going on is, you know, it's unsettling.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it adds like this tension to it. Like, oh, what is happening?
Like, if the Doctor doesn't know, I really don't know.
But he starts working on the brain machine to fix it so that they can transfer Kiv. He's just full on board helping the bad guys. But I mean, again, that could be like he's tampering with the machine, but I don't really think he does.
I don't know. This is what I'm saying. I don't know.
So Yorkanos does get away and he finds Dorf and frees him.
I like how he's just decided that the Doctor is his absolute nemesis now.
I gotta kill the Doctor because he betrayed us. I mean, he has legit reasons. Meanwhile, Perry goes off on her separate path and bumps into this woman who's like, oh, hey, you're gonna work for me now.
Do you want to be a slave?
And Perry's like, sure, why not? Got nothing better to do.
The person I'm here with is working for the bad guy, so...
I think the woman assumes that she's someone who is going to be converted or whatever, and then, like, Dorf, and the Rock were, but she got away. And she's like, well, if you don't want to, like, get caught, like, you just be a slave for me, and it'll be fine. She's like, okay, cool. And then she's put in, like, this big thing that, like, obscures her identity. It's got, like, a big veil on it. And then she goes in and is waiting on the doctor and Syl and everybody. And she, at one point, puts on a very deep voice. Like, she goes up to the doctor and is basically like, hey, what are we doing here? What's the plan? And then he's just like, oh, this is Perry. And, like, rips her, like, veil off and is like, she's probably poisoned all of you.
That's the thing that doesn't, like, if it was a ploy, that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Because it's better to have her out. And as somebody who can, like, sneak around. So it doesn't make any sense.
No, but it's good. It's interesting. Good.
I mean, yeah, because it's fascinating to watch, you know, everybody's reaction of, like, this isn't how this works. We're totally breaking how this works.
To be fair, they do somewhat address how this could be a part of the doctor's ploy. Because he's like, I need to interrogate her. Which could be a way to get her out.
Okay. Because,
like, they're going to interrogate her on the Rocks of Sorrow, and this will be a way for them to escape. But then we see that interrogation, and then he even, like, says, like, no, I got you out here. Like, I'm on your side. But then says, tell me what you know, Syl. So it's like, but then we pull back and see that he's being watched on a camera by Syl, which he could know about, so it could still be him. It's just like, I don't know. There's so many layers and I don't know what's real and what's not.
Here's the problem. That interrogation scene fucking sucks.
Yeah, that was the specific scene that Colin Baker was like, I don't know how to play this.
Why was it so brutal?
Because the show is mean to Perry.
Like, I don't know how to describe it, because it's not like it's, you know.
She's chained up to some rocks and the waves are crashing on top of her. And, like, those are real waves. She did not enjoy filming that scene.
I bet.
I don't know how to describe, like, what I find so visceral about it, because it's not like it's particularly violent.
I mean, part of it, it's that it's the doctor interrogating her.
This is somebody who their dynamic has frequently been
abusive.
Kind of abusive. And so it's like, why are we in this situation again?
Over and over.
Right. Where it's like, the doctor is doing, and like, I don't know. There's something about it where I'm like, this is too much. And it goes on forever, it feels like. You know, it's not like he's like, tell me what you know. Just kidding. Just play along. Like, he is like, mean and intense and being like, I'll just let the waves come up and kill you. Like,
he even gives her a reason of why he's doing this that is an evil reason, which is just like, they're going to want to put Kiv in my body, and I yeah, don't want that.
I'm looking out for myself here.
Which is a shitty thing to do and say.
But yeah, the scene, it just feels like way too much. Especially given, like, his first episode. It's not fun to watch. It's not fun to watch the doctor be abusive to his companions. Why does it keep happening?
I'd say there's a version of this scene that could work. I think it almost works. I do think it is a bit much.
But I mean, it needs to be way shorter.
Yes.
Maybe not, like, her being waterboarded.
Right? Like, I don't understand. He's like, I need to interrogate her. And there's so many ways to do that scene, right? Where they're, like, in a prison cell and he's talking to her. She does not need to be chained with her hands above her head while waves crash into her. Like, right. That was a choice, and it was a weird one.
Yeah.
But I do enjoy the sort of, like, the doctor reveals who she is. And then he's like, no, this is just a way to get you out of here. But then have him go, actually, no, I'm just pretending that this is a way to get you out of here because I want you to give up the information. But then showing that the bad guys are watching this, so he's still right. Putting on an act.
Absolutely.
I like those, like, twists.
Absolutely. The, like, tension from the ambiguity of this is amazing.
But yeah, don't care for this scene. Honestly, you just move that to a cell or something.
Right.
It works a lot. I think it would work a lot better than just watching an actress be smashed about by waves and knowing that she hates it legitimately. Yeah.
Sorry, I had a lot of feelings about that scene.
So that interrogation scene is also ultimately, other than, like, instilling all of this ambiguity in the viewer's mind, Doesn't really accomplish much because they just go back inside. Your Kanos points that rock melty weapon at the doctor and is like, I'm going to kill you. And that is the end of episode 2. That is the cliffhanger. And we are now into episode 3, which I have called The Face of Syl because of a really hilarious joke. So your Kanos is going to shoot the doctor and Perry saves him because I guess she still somewhat trusts the doctor.
Either she trusts him or, like, just couldn't see it happen, you know?
I think they all just sort of split up. At this point, the doctor at the trial is like, I don't know any, I'm so confused.
Doesn't make any sense.
And, like, the Inquisitor, she gives the doctor, like, a lot of outs. She's like, do we need to take a break? Maybe you need to sort your brain out a little bit.
Like, if you can't remember this stuff, you can't defend yourself. And the doctor's like, no!
And she's also like, also, do you want a court defender since you do seem to be confused? Maybe it'd help if you could have somebody to talk to. And he's like, no, because if you give me a defender, you guys are against me anyway. How's that going to help? But it's also like, dude, she is like offering you an olive branch here. You're taking none of it.
Yeah, take a recess. What? Figure some shit out. Yeah. Which, it's almost frustrating because it's just like, no, we got to keep doing... We got to keep the serial moving. And it's like, okay, but that doesn't make any sense for you personally.
Okay, so like, here's the thing. This is a, they don't take any breaks. How long is this damn trial?
Right.
Because this is what? Roughly 2 hours per serial plus a half hour, I guess.
You are going to need to take a recess soon for bathroom breaks.
Right. This is like a 7 hour trial.
Yep.
Roughly.
I mean, I know Time Lords like don't need to sleep and stuff. But surely they need snacks.
But a new body is brought in for Kiv to be transferred into another slug guy's brown. But it has a stinger on it.
Ooh.
That Crozier
okay.
fondles very weirdly.
Here's the thing. They spend so much time setting that up.
And do nothing with it.
And do nothing with it. I mean, literally, this dude, like, strokes it for, like, 2 minutes of screen time.
It's and like it's like right where his tail is.
And yeah. It's not important. Why did we spend so much time on that?
I couldn't tell you.
All right.
But they're about to put his brain into that body. And Kiv says, if this procedure fails, liquefy everyone. Just kill them all. Kill anyone who didn't save me. Which makes, like, Syl, like, terrified for, like, the whole procedure. The whole time he's like, make sure this goes okay.
Yeah, I mean, Kiv isn't like over the top villainous at all, but he's just kind of like cold and calculating and like, okay, you know, if you can't save me, then just kill everybody. He's really kind of matter of fact about it.
So your Kanos is going around looking for some resistance fighters to lead. He assumes there's got to be some somewhere. And then they stop for some food. They have like this little nice little domestic scene where, I don't know, Perry starts petting Dorf.
Aww.
And this makes your Kanos jealous.
Yeah, that's creepy.
Your Kanos is very, like, weird with Perry.
You know, he's very toxic masculinity, I guess.
He also just calls her his bride.
His bride-to-be, yeah.
And Perry just kind of laughs this off.
Well, she's used to it by now.
Literally,
she's like,
everyone
at least this guy
is obsessed.
Isn't actively violent to me.
At least he's not Phantom of the Opera or half Morlocks or something.
Every single villain has been like, you are beautiful. The only one who hasn't is Syl.
I was gonna say, every time Syl is like, she is gross, I'm like, actually, this is refreshing.
So the transfer begins. Syl is panicking and is told to stop gyrating his throat, which is a wonderful turn of phrase. It seems like it's going poorly. Syl just starts, like, begging for his... He's like, oh, it's a joke. If it's not a joke, I'll pay you lots of money not to kill me. Just starts trying every gambit he can. But then things turn out well, and the transfer is a success. And now he's in a new body.
And they mention the stinger again.
The stinger that is not important. So Perry and your Kanos do find some resistance people and are immediately tied up. They're led by a guy named Tuza, I think is his name. But then they're like, no, we're here to, like, fight and stuff, and we don't like those people. We're here to help. And they're like, oh, okay, I guess we'll help you fight. They agree to fight with your Kanos, and your Kanos is going to lead them. They seem very, like...
They recognize him.
Yeah.
He's, like, a legendary king-type person in this world, so...
They're swayed super easily, though.
Yeah.
And also, but also, apparently, they've been doing nothing this whole time, just sort of hiding out, stockpiling weapons, but doing nothing with them. And they need a leader. They need a Brian Blessed. Oh, and this is when that scene happens I was talking about where, like, Kif starts to go into cardiac arrest, and Crozier's like, oh no, takes a sip of his tea, sets it down, and then starts giving him CPR and stuff.
It's like, well, I don't want to get dehydrated while I'm doing CPR.
That is very physically demanding, so.
Meanwhile, the doctor has teamed up with Syl to learn about business. They go over, like, I don't know, he's like, I'm going to deny these people money. And the doctor is like, no, actually, I know about the future because I'm a Time Lord, and you should go ahead and prove it because various things will happen and you'll get more money back. Basically. And Syl's like, ooh.
I mean, it does take him a minute. Like, the doctor, as soon as the doctor's like, no, I'm helping you, Syl's like, okay, what kind of trick is this? But at this point, when the doctor's like, I can help you make money, he's like, oh, okay, I trust you now.
Oh, and this is the scene where Syl is also eating this green goop.
He offers it to the doctor.
Marshmallows is what he calls them. The doctor eats them and then looks very sick. I'm sure it's just green jello, but it looks slimy and disgusting. Tuza is taking Yorkanos to the weapons stockpile when one of the weapons guard, I think, just prematurely dies of old age. He just, like, ages up. I don't know how that happened. What was the thing there?
I mean, they definitely...
It was just a guy that was not old and then suddenly he was old. Like, that was some method of killing him.
They don't say, do they?
I assume it has to do with Crozier's experiments. But it's just sort of this one-off thing that kind of happens. I don't know why, like, you can't just shoot a guy. Why has it got to be so elaborate?
They make bullets.
So Kif is about to be resuscitated in his new body. And Syl is like, I have to be the first civilized face that he sees. It's very important.
This scene is terrifying.
Yeah.
And Kif wakes up and it's just like Syl is all up in his face. Yeah. And the camera just... an extreme close-up.
I love the way that it's edited, too, because it goes from, like, blurry and Syl slowly comes into focus, and he's so close, and he's got his tongue out, and you're just like, ah!
And he's like, am I in hell? And he's like, no, it's just me, Syl. And then he just, like, starts crying.
He stops!
But it's fine. Kif is fine. The transfer worked well. He's still got a bit of a headache, though, because his skull... it's still just too small for his big old brain. They're still going to need somebody else. And, like, every time they do this, they're like, we're going to need a bigger skull. Everyone just sort of, like, looks at the doctor.
He does have an unusually big head.
I think it's mostly the hair.
It is, yeah, that's fair.
But he does have a big head. The Tuza and their people go to where the weapons are, but there's been a giant rock fall that has blocked off all of the weapons and also killed a guy. See, you can kill people by just throwing rocks at them, too.
Just rocks.
And then we see Frax come out and sort of surround them, the guard. It's like, I'm on to you.
Right. Obviously, we knew you were stockpiling weapons and planning a revolution, and we were just kind of waiting.
The doctor interrupts this episode and goes, hey, I had nothing to do with any of this plot line. You can't put this on me.
This B plot is not relevant to the court proceedings.
Why are we watching it?
I am not responsible for any of the deaths that have happened in this scene. And they're like, ah, butterfly effect. Everything you've done has sort of led to this moment. You might not be directly, but you're indirectly responsible. They resume the episode, and Frax shoots everyone.
Everyone.
He shoots Yorkanos, he shoots Dorf, he shoots Tuza, he shoots Perry, everybody. And the doctor's like, this is bullshit. I refuse to believe any of this. And that's the cliffhanger? That's the end of episode 3.
I mean, the cliffhanger is kind of that, like, Perry's been shot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not like they'd kill Perry. We're now into episode 4, which I've called Something's Fishy.
Oh.
there's many things fishy going on. Yeah, they're fine. The shots weren't lethal. They were just stunned, basically knocked out. And then they wake up and Frax explains, like, I knew about your weapons. I knew they were there, but we didn't do anything about them because we knew everyone was too scared to actually use them. But then your Kano showed up and we were like, oh, this guy's going to lead a revolution. So we need to put a stop to that. So Kiv's new body used to be a fisherman, and now he's just super into fish. He loves fish and is like sort of obsessing about it. And Syl's like, this is not good. We're about to have a meeting, and it's a very important business meeting.
I like the way he talks about it too, because he's like, I dreamed of the ocean.
And like, even Syl is like, you hate fish. He's like, I do. Sea. And then Syl's like, we're gonna need to do another transfer again, because this is bad. Also, I mean, his head's still too small. So his head's too small, and now he loves fish. And that's no good. Tuza and Perry and everybody is taken away and put in cells. Tuza specifically gets taken away to be experimented on or something. I don't remember exactly what it is. And then we have this scene where Perry just complains about being more than just homesick, like time sick, I guess.
That's just homesick. Time and space are the same thing.
And then there's this whole discussion where she's like, I miss the people I love or whatever. And he's like, what is love? I don't know what love is. She's like, that's when you care about someone more than life itself or whatever. Care about something or someone.
Yeah, more than you care about your own life.
Hey, Joe.
Yeah.
I love you. I don't think I love you more than life itself.
Yeah. You'd tie me to a rock and torture me?
I mean, I didn't say that. Like, that feels like way more like an extreme extraction from what I said. I'm just saying, if I had a choice to save me or you, if I was you, I would make my own plans.
But I like O'Connor's reaction to this, because he's like, she's like, you care for them more than life. And he's like, well, I care nothing for mine, so I must love you. It's almost like he's saying, oh, maybe I love you.
Maybe I love everyone.
Because then he gets into this whole discussion about the afterlife. His people believe that if you die, you get reincarnated until you've done enough violence that you get to become king. And then once you become king, which he is, and you die, then you go on to live with the other dead kings.
I like that she's like, and then what?
Then we fight!
And she's like, of course.
Fight some more.
Oh, Tuza was being tested to see if he could be a recipient of the Kiv transfer. And no, he's no good. Also, they've tested the doctor, and he's no good for the transfer, even though he got that big old head. So Crozier's like, well, what about Perry? And this is the first time that the doctor's like, actually, how about no? Because I like Perry. He's like, I'm evil and betraying her and all that stuff, but I don't necessarily want to see her dead. That still feels a little bad to me. A little too soon. Crusher's like, well, then go find someone better. So the doctor leaves to go find a better candidate for the Kiv transfer. But what he really does is he goes and frees Yurkanos and Dorf, but not Perry, because Perry's not there. Crozier actually went ahead and was like, I'm going to go ahead and get Perry and do tests on her to see if she can be transferred into. He's not going to wait on the doctor. And they shave her head. They really shaved her head?
They did not. They didn't. I watched the episode. They didn't.
Yeah, she's got a bald cap on.
It's not that good.
No, it's not.
It's a good look for her, though. Like, if I think she, like, really did it, it'd be cool.
Probably.
But the doctor frees Yurkanos and Dorf, and he's with Frax. And Frax, like, gives the doctor the, like, stun gun thing, and then he gives that to Yurkanos, and then they all get out of there and lock Frax in the cell. Yurkanos is like, why are you helping me? You're my enemy! And he's like, no, I'm doing a long con. So, like, that points to, like, the doctor...
Okay, but there are just choices that don't make sense if that's true.
Yeah. It's the same problem I had with the movie Frozen. They reveal the bad guy in Frozen, and like, I was like, there's stuff that doesn't make sense if that's the case, if he's the bad guy. There are things
that he would not have done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not being tricky, it's lying.
Yeah, sometimes yes. They're all about the twist, and they leave out some of the details.
They make it so it's like, well, we want this villain to reveal to be a twist. We're like, well, we gotta like distract from that, but then they make things happen that don't make sense. Just to push you away from thinking that. And it's like, well, yeah, I don't think that, because now it doesn't make sense for the character to do those things.
I've done that.
That's sort of what's happening here. but more confusingly. Kevin Sill's business meeting begins. A new alien comes in. I don't remember what it looked like. I do remember it looking cool. And I was like, nice design. But now it's completely gone from my brain.
I think that it may be a repainted Pteroleptil from the Fifth Doctor story, The Visitation. Because I think it's like a similar sort of lizard creature, but it's a different color.
Yeah, that sounds right. For some reason, I want to say purple, but I don't. I could be wrong. But the meeting is going not great because Kiv is just super into, like, fish trades. Your Kanos is just as confused as the audience and is trying to figure out what's going on. And he has a great line. I think Dorf says something about the Doctor has a point. And he's like, everyone's got a point nowadays. I'm a man of action, not reason. And he's also like, I need to save my bride-to-be, which is Perry. So that's the scene where he says bride-to-be. And the Doctor's like,
I don't feel like that's something Perry agreed to.
Yeah.
The Doctor tries to pull the prisoner gambit. Like, Yorkanos is like, let's just rush in and blow shit up. And the Doctor's like, let's play a little more subtle. Basically, he says Yorkanos is his prisoner, and the Doctor has got full permission from Crozier to do stuff. And they're going to put Kiv's brain in Yorkanos, I guess. So they go talk to a mentor about this. And the mentor is like, okay, that makes sense. But I'm going to call Crozier to make sure everything is on the up and up about this. So Yorkanos is like, screw this subtlety bullshit, and like grabs him and does a bit of yelling, which this mentor hates.
Oh, yeah.
This is one of my favorite characters, just because he's like, all right, I'll tell you everything. Please just stop. Just be quiet. Which is how I feel some days.
He's got very sensitive ears.
The thing they were doing to Yorkanos to like calm him down that didn't work. They were doing that to Tuzo, but it hasn't fully taken hold yet. He's out of it, but fine. They take him, and the Doctor's like, let's go free more slaves. And Yorkanos is like, why would we do that? That doesn't seem very fun. Let's kill the bad guys. And he's like, if we free the slaves, you've got an army. And he's like, oh, okay. I like the way you think. So they're going to go do that.
Also, maybe just free the slaves.
Yeah,
just because it's a good thing to do.
But it's not as fun as killing the bad guys. They head out, and Frax, who they had locked in the cell, has been let go, has been released.
I like in your notes it says Frax is freed, because that seems fun to say.
Frax is freed. And I believe, I'm not sure if it's him or another guard, but they catch up to him, and Dorf is shot and killed. They put down the dog.
Which is, to be fair, what he wanted.
By the way, we haven't mentioned, there have been a ton of dog jokes in this serial. Yorkanos calls him a dog of war at one point, and then like corrects himself because he was like, oh, that's insensitive. There's a bit where the Doctor tells him to stay, very much like you would a dog. I mean, Perry pets him.
Perry scratches him behind the ears.
So a lot of dog jokes. But now they've put down the dog. Yorkanos is a little bit sad about that. Yorkanos destroys some shit, freeing the slaves, but also setting off a bunch of alarms. He is very excited to destroy all this stuff, too. He's just yelling and screaming and having a good old time.
Hamming it up.
Kiv is brought to Crozier to prepare for the transfer, because they are just going to transfer him into Perry. And also, like, everything is going nuts. The slaves are free and sort of taking over and revolting and whatever. And they're like, well, we got to do this transfer now. And the Doctor is rushing to, like, get to Perry, I assume, when his TARDIS appears, and he stops and then walks backwards into his TARDIS, and it disappears.
Yeah, then you see the beam, and you realize this is when he's beamed into the space station for the trial.
Yeah, they replay that like model shot where the TARDIS goes into it from episode one. And at this point, I was like, what the fuck?
That moment really got me, like, literally on the edge of my seat. I'm like,
absolutely.
Holy shit.
It's like, everything's tying up here. Wait, you can't.
You can't take the Doctor out of the story right when everything's at its craziest.
I mean, the Doctor says that. And the Valiant's like, you're too late anyway. They'd already transferred Kiv into Perry. And then we see that. And then Crozier is like, Oh, I actually, it worked fully this time. Like, there's a bit of that fisherman and the other guy, but I completely got rid of Perry. Perry is not in this body at all. It's all Kiv. Also, the Time Lords put your Kanos in a time bubble, slowing him down so that he can enter that room at the exact right moment to do whatever.
Right, because this technology is too much of a threat. Kind of like Dastari. Was it Dastari and the two doctors that, yeah, the Time Lord sent the second doctor to stop him because of this technology was too dangerous.
Yeah. So your Kanos is running in slow motion towards this door. Perry sits up and now she's talking with a very deep voice. It doesn't seem very much like Kiv, to be honest. But it is creepy.
Yeah, the personality doesn't seem like Kiv, but it is done to great effect, I think. Especially since Perry is so whiny. It's a big change because it's a very deep voice.
I think it's the best acting she's done on the show.
I think so. You definitely get the sense that, like, Perry is gone.
Yeah. It reminded me a lot of when Tegan was...
the Mara. Yeah.
Yeah, the Mara. But we don't get a lot of this because Yorkanos comes in and then kills her, shoots her, starts shooting everybody. I mean, he doesn't just start immediately shooting her. He sees that she's no longer Perry and then says, no, and shoots everybody. And then I'm like, wait, what? Wait, this is how Perry's story ends? I was very upset and confused. And then the doctor is also upset. And then he's like, I gotta figure out what's going on here.
Watching this, did you know that this was Perry's last story?
No, I did not.
Yeah, I knew that at least. And I feel like Colin Baker in an interview had hinted that, like, something bad happens to her. But I still was not prepared for that.
No.
It's so sudden and shocking. And on the one hand, I think it's good. Like, because it's, like, interesting and dramatic. And
yeah, it's good storytelling.
Yeah. But also, it's a shitty thing to happen to Perry.
After a string of shitty things.
Yeah. I mean, I do not like Perry. Perry is one of my least favorite companions. But even I was like, oh. She doesn't deserve to go out like that. What the hell?
Like, a lot of my problem with Perry isn't necessarily with Perry. It's the writing.
The writing and you know, let's say it, the acting. I think Nicola Bryant's a lovely person. I've seen her at conventions and she's great, but for whatever reason, and I don't blame it all on her, but the acting is not good. And the accent hurts a lot.
I think if she not had to do the accent, she could have focused more on her acting.
That's exactly how I feel about it.
Whereas I think she was focusing on doing the accent. And
then put, you know, shitty scripts on top of that.
Yeah.
It's just a big confluence of bad ideas.
This is a show I currently watch, and the actress in the first season, I think, is struggling from concentrating more on the accent than on the acting, but she steps up to the plate. Like, in the second season, she's really, really good. So Nicola Bryant just wasn't given that opportunity, unfortunately.
I do think she's been better this season than she was the prior season.
That is, yeah, that's definitely true.
Because, I think she was great in The Mysterious Planet, and, she was good in this one up until... I mean, even when she was evil, it's just, she kept being abused. The thing is, like, they have her saying constantly, I want to leave. I want to leave. And, like, maybe she should have just left because it didn't go well for her. I don't know. It just feels, like, really shitty.
Yeah. I don't understand why she didn't leave. Like, nobody ever really talks her into staying. Nobody's ever, like... Oh, you shouldn't leave. You can't leave.
Right. It's not like the doctor's like, oh, don't leave me. You know, it's not like, he seems like he'd be okay if she left.
Mostly she's like, I don't want to do this adventure. Can I go back to the TARDIS? And the doctor's like, no, we gotta do an adventure. But that's like the most he does.
Yeah.
And also, like, you know.
Or he's just like, hey, you stay here. I'll go do it.
The audience is like, yeah, you gotta do an adventure. That's the show.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's, yeah, it is very dramatic and interesting. But then it's just like, also...
Disagree with you, by the way. You have in your notes the doctor is somewhat upset.
I mean, he's upset for like a second, but then he sort of shifts, I think, into being more like trying to figure out what's going on with the trial.
The way that I think about that is it's just like refusal to believe.
Yeah, it's like he's in denial, or it's like, oh shit, I really gotta figure out what's going on and see if I can fix this.
This can't be true, because if it's true, then Perry's dead. So something's up and I need to figure... Like, he needs to figure out what it is in order to get back to Perry if she is alive.
Yeah, but I don't think he's going to get back to Perry. this is her last one, so.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is like, I'm into this, and I would have enjoyed it if I knew it was going to pay off better, but I know it's not going to pay off well. As it is, if you just ended the show here, for example, then it's just, well, the doctor was pretty responsible for her death. I mean, the trial did its job and sort of like, hey, look, she was multiple times like, I don't want to do this, and you kind of kept dragging her into stuff, and now she's dead. And that's kind of fair.
It's damning, but it's not wrong.
But I assume that's going to be proven to be wrong, but at this point, it seems real shitty. But yeah, that's the end of this episode. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back for our final thoughts.
Welcome to Dr. Geek's Laboratory.
Dr. Geek here with another reminder that the ESO Network is pro-science and pro-vaccine. We urge you to be a superhero and protect yourself, your family, and your fellow geeks around the world. Don't be fooled by the forces of evil and their anti-science misinformation campaign. Consult the latest CDC guidelines, your doctor, and get the COVID vaccine today.
Okay, promo for the Flopcast. Let's go.
First, I need an adjective.
Naked.
Need a noun.
Wombat.
Place.
Woonsocket, Rhode Island.
Number.
251.
Okay then, the Flopcast is a naked podcast about cartoons, music, comics, movies, and wombats. Find us on the ESO Network and flopcast.net. Go ahead and listen to it in Woonsocket, Rhode Island, 251 times.
And we're back. Tony, do you know what time it is?
I do.
What time is it?
It's time for final thoughts.
You didn't do your bit, but also you didn't do your bit in a weird way that made me uncomfortable.
Unlike this episode.
Nice.
Final thoughts.
This cereal is, like, you can't, it's good. There's nothing else to say. Like, there's an incredible tension in it. There's it has an incredible forward momentum of like, oh my God, what is happening? What's going to happen next? I need to know. I need to watch the next one. It's like, strength is also its weakness. The fact that you don't know which of the options it is what makes you have to see what happens next. And it's also just fun. Like, you have two great big, like, you know, you have Brian Blessed and whatever Syl is doing. Like, so you have, like, weird big characters doing weird big things, which is always good. I just like this. It's way more integrated into the idea of it being a trial, right? Because you're cutting back and forth and having the doctor be like, this doesn't make any sense. I don't remember this happening. Like, you're using the trial parts to build tension in the episode parts and vice versa, really. And so it's just like way more better executed as far as like the concept of this season. I don't know. I liked it.
Felicity, what are your final thoughts?
I did volunteer for this episode because I like this one a lot. It's got to be my favorite Colin Baker story altogether. It does have its flaws. And in hindsight, even in hindsight, knowing that not everything gets satisfactorily explained, I still really like it. And just, I can't forget that feeling when I was like, oh no. They took the doctor away. What's going to happen to Perry? Also, Brian Blessed. I mean, he makes this story. And like I said, I hadn't seen Flash Gordon at the time, but when I later saw it, it made this even better. I mean, it's like, oh, he's the same guy. He's the same character. And it's really great. So yeah, I really like this one. You know, when people dump on the trial as a whole, I get it, but I really think this story stands out.
I think I've been having like a real mixed reaction to this season because so far I've really enjoyed it. But every time I'm like, man, this is great. I'm super interested in this. Everybody goes, oh, well, don't get too attached to that. Or when I'm like, I have all these questions and it's really cool. And then it's like, well, don't expect answers.
Yeah, I feel I'm guilty of that as well. I feel like you can be a little more. I mean, I think that, it comes to. Well, one thing is that it doesn't come to the conclusion that Eric Sayward planned, and he kind of kicks his ball and goes home. But, you know, it later came out like what his plan was, and it's like, that wouldn't have worked either. So I think that what we get is as good as can be expected in the circumstances, and not entirely unsatisfying. But I will also say, like, when we finish with this whole season, I'm not a huge fan of Big Finish just because audio drama isn't something that I normally consume, and just because there's... They did way too much trying to, like, squeeze in all these entire new entire companions that you've never heard of and stuff like that. I think where Big Finish really excels and what I put some effort into listening to is this gap, like the conclusion of Perry and the beginning of Mel, which you will see in the next serial is another whole thing. But there are a couple of Big Finish episodes, Big Finish stories that I would highly recommend after you finish viewing the trial.
Yeah, I've heard Big Finish has done really well with Colin Baker. And
they have on the whole, and just, but yeah, I there are a couple of stories that deal with this, you know, weird timey-wimey period in particular that I think are excellent.
I think what's interesting to me is it seems like the show is doing something new, and that's always good, right? They're like trying a new format and it seems to really be working for them. But at the same time, it's like it's born out of this chaos.
Yeah, it's born out of desperation. Like if we might not get another chance if this doesn't work.
And that chaos seems to have like created both like, you know, interesting experimentation and like just like a lack of care. It is responsible both for the best things and the worst things about this season.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a good analysis.
I love all of these questions, and I love the ambiguity of this, and like I think it works dramatically very well. But yeah, it does, like knowing that the things aren't going to pay off kind of dampens it a little bit. But it is, this episode on its own, if you just look at it on its own, other than like, you know, continuing this theme of abuse towards Perry,
right? If you could somehow change that scene to anything else.
But, like, just on its own, it makes sense and it works. But it does kind of, like, make me think of, like, J.J. Abrams and Damon Lindelof a little bit, where they have this idea of, like, we're just going to ask questions, but we don't know what it means.
Yeah, you're hurting my heart there. Lost was a big
I actually haven't seen Lost, but I've heard a lot of people complain about it. I'm more thinking of like I hated Prometheus. I mean the last Star Wars movie I didn't care for. It seems more like they're interested in the puzzle box aspect than actually knowing what the puzzle is about.
I feel like Damon Lindelof redeems himself a lot with Watchmen.
I agree with you to a certain degree. I think the finale.
I think that there is certainly ambiguity there, but I think it works. And I think that I was so impressed by that series and what
Watchmen
he tried to
would
do.
Have been better if it ended with more ambiguity. I do want to be clear that I think there's room for like a certain amount of ambiguity in storytelling. It just has to be in service of something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like with anything. Any of the pieces that are there in your story, they are pieces that are there to build a thing. And if it's just a pile of pieces.
that was my big problem with Prometheus, was it was like, yeah, there's a bunch of interesting questions here, but they don't mean anything. They're not pointing towards anything.
Well, and also, I think sometimes it is important to pose a question to an audience and say, you know, that's what I'm saying about Watchmen, that I think Watchmen would have been really powerful and really impactful if she's got this, like, God power in her hands, and the question is, should she do it?
Yeah.
Or is that too much power for a single person to have? Or could she do a lot of good with it? And leaving that question, like, with the audience and ending, you know, to sit with that and try to come up with an answer, I think would have been like really impactful. But again, that's in service of something. To just be like, well, is he a robot? Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if he's a robot or not. Like, that question in and of itself isn't that interesting. So yeah, when you have just questions about, like, you know, the mechanics of the story, then you're looking too much at the mechanics of the story anyway.
You know what else this serial reminds me of? The opening two-parter of the series 6 of Doctor Who, the ones with the silence, which raises lots of interesting questions. It's really well done. It's a fun, exciting episode. And you're like, I'm into whatever this season's going to do. And then later, you know, you get the finale with all the River Song and Let's Kill Hitler and all that bullshit.
Oof.
And it's bad. The setup is really good. And those episodes are still really good.
Yeah,
right.
It's just when they finally answer it, you're like, I don't know.
I think I like that conclusion, it sounds like, more than you do. It's not perfect, but that's where I like what Moffat is doing and kind of put trust
I
in
mostly
him.
Have problems with...
Oh, that's where we diverge.
Yeah.
I mostly have problems with Let's Kill Hitler, more so than the finale.
That entire season sends me into a rage.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm not a super big fan of what they did to River. We'll get there eventually too, but I came up with this whole plan for series 6.
Oh my god, it was crazy.
On like
okay.
Things I kind of gleaned from pop culture cuz I hadn't seen it yet.
Hadn't seen any of it. And the stuff that he was coming up with was like weirdly like you came up with the eye patches. Like he was weirdly with canon but in a way that was like this actually makes more sense.
Because I knew I had seen something like with people wearing eye patches, so I knew eye patches were in it, but I was like trying to make it make sense. In the episode, I think it's just like it's some sort of technology thing. But in my version, it was like the eye patches were made from silence flesh.
So that you can always see them.
Oh, yeah. That is
which
a cool
is like
idea.
Gory as hell, by the way. Like super yeah. messed up. Probably would not actually be in Doctor Who.
No, but it's an interesting idea.
But I can definitely see where the concepts are really cool, but the payoff is not as satisfying. I felt that way about Sherlock, honestly. I hated the final episode of Sherlock so much.
I stopped watching last
I'm like, I could
three.
Have written something better than that, and I don't write.
I don't even think I got that far.
But yeah, Doctor Who. I think I've said all of my thoughts on it, and it's good. It's both good and bad at the same time. It's Schrodinger's episode. But
taken on its own, I'd say it's a fantastic episode. And you don't have to necessarily take it within context of the whole. The experience of watching it was good.
It's like, I think The Last Jedi is an amazing movie.
Sure.
It sets up a lot of interesting stuff.
Oh, me too. I love that movie so much, and yeah.
I'd still love to see a sequel to it.
Yeah.
an actual sequel to it. But yeah, I think this serial works. Everything it's doing works, and like they could have paid it off. Interestingly, I feel like if that had happened, which I feel like it's probably not. We'll see. Maybe we'll love it.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll be like, what is everybody talking about? This is amazing.
I hope that you like it more than you expect to.
I've been enjoying 6 more than I expected to. I've also seen all the problems that people have with it, too. So the Doctor is abusive, and it's some of these episodes are a bit wobbly, but I've been enjoying it. I find something to enjoy in every Doctor, even the ones that I'm not like, they're not my favorite.
Yeah.
So. But before we go, is there anything that you would like to plug?
Well, people can listen to the Flopcast, and that is at flopcast.net or facebook.com/flopcast or at Flopcast on Twitter, which is an account I actually maintain. I'm not a regular co-host, but I appear sometimes. And Kevin and I are planning to be at Dragon Con, unless the whole thing falls apart. We're planning to be there. We have plane tickets
awesome.
And everything.
Tony, is there anything you want to plug?
I will say it because I think if I say it and other people hear me say it, then I have to do it. I have another podcast in the works.
Cool.
I've made a logo. I've done a couple of the interviews. I've edited a rough of the first episode. I'm not going to talk about it or say what it is because that would be jinxing it. But if you don't see anything from me soon, maybe yell at me.
Okay.
Yeah. Be like, Tony, what's up with that podcast?
Hey, that podcast that you were teasing, is that ever going to get done?
I'm just going to say check out thedip.com, D-I-P-P. I've been writing articles there. Speaking of like me being a completionist, I am doing a series called The Comics Completist, in which I am watching every comic book, movie, and TV show ever made and talking about them.
Crap, really? Wow.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I'm almost through with the 40s.
Oh, man.
Some of them are bad and also racist. But some of them are good. Some of them are fun.
I don't know if you know this about the 40s, but they were pretty racist.
Man, you want to hear Batman say some racial slurs? Go to the 40s. I've also recently written an article. I actually wrote it after episode 3 of Loki dropped. So it's about how Loki is the best Doctor Who currently on television. So,
and hey, if you want to see where a lot of Loki was shot, go to the Atlanta Marriott at Dragon Con.
You said that.
Yeah. I've not been to Dragon Con, but I've seen pictures from Dragon Con. I'm like, I recognize that elevator.
The elevators, I think.
Yeah,
yeah. You're like, oh, this was shot at the Marriott.
It's an amazing looking hotel. And
I believe they used that same elevator in Hunger Games.
Absolutely. The second Hunger Games movie.
If you like this episode of the podcast, check out more on watchyourassalon.com. You can also find our podcast, our Patreon, our Amazon wish list, and more at linktree.com/watchathon. That's linktr.ee/watchathon. Special thanks again to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden.
You can check him out at matthewgolden.net. And I want to give another special shout out to Vincent EL for providing us with our amazing theme song.
Thank you, Vince.
Check out more of their music at soundcloud.com/VincentEL or VincentEL.bandcamp.com. And tune in next time when we talk about The Trial of a Time Lord, part 3, also part 9 to 12, Terror of the Vervoids, with returning guests Adam Clegg. And then we'll be back after that for the final serial of the season, in which we're going to try to get everybody back on. So, to give their final verdict.
Our final, final thoughts.
Our final, final thoughts, yes.
I mean, not really.
No, and we still have the 7th Doctor and the 8th Doctor and the 9th and the 10th and the 11th and the 12th and the 13th. Oh, and the War Doctor.
We'll talk about it.
Probably by the time we get there, the 14th Doctor. But until next time, keep calm and wrestle on.
Goodbye, and I love you in a platonic, parasocial way.
Bye.
We must kill all who stand between us and victory. We will grind every last slug beneath our feet. Yes!
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.